Frank Sullivan's Storm by Val B. Russell. The wind hammered the bus windows, causing it to heave and sway over the yellow line. It was going to be another irritating day of snow squalls designed by a mean god to distort Frank's sense of distance and proportion, while the Mickey of rum under the driver's seat would subdue and liquefy everything into a fluid account of what his life could have been. When Body walked out on him, he was gutted, but not surprised. He'd been waiting for it. After Ben died, she changed, and to be fair, so had he. That baby was everything to her. He'd never really wanted a kid, but there was something about little Ben that got inside you, made you want to be a man, a strong, unwavering protector. Then everything changed when Ben turned too. He started falling down, his eyes stopped focusing, and when he took the first seizure, Frank, the strong, unwavering protector, disappeared to be replaced by Frank, the drunken, cowardly bastard, who deserted them both. By the time Ben had his second tumor removed, Frank had stopped sleeping at the house, choosing instead to live in a furnished flop house downtown. Frank pulled onto the shoulder of the road and turned off the bus engine. He slid his hand under the seat to retrieve his Mickey, taking four good swigs, one for each of his failures. He felt the familiar cascading burn of the rum transcending the lies of his life and filling his chest with a calm superiority that, for a while, made him believe he no longer gave a shit about life. Somewhere off in the distant past, he could see his father unconscious and bleeding by the side of the road in Renews, his mother still in her nightdress grabbing his father's arms while 10-year-old Frank took his legs. Into the house they went, dropping him on the floor of the bedroom because neither of them had the strength to lift him as high as the bed. "What odds?" his mother said. "He's probably shit himself anyway, and I don't want that filth in the sheets." In the night his father would come too and sing out for his mother, but she never answered his calls. He was left to lie in this nightly squalor of his own piss and vomit. The next day he'd be gone again, and Frank's mother would be on her hands and knees with a bucket and brush scrubbing the floorboards, cursing both God and the devil for her lot in life. Frank always escaped her by squirreling himself away in the shed, where he'd smoke the cigarette butts he'd collected from the old coffee can his Uncle Chris kept by the back door. Even from this distance he could still hear his mother cursing, waging war with the men who'd let her down. His father died the following December, and when they found him on his back in front of the Christmas tree, he was clutching his chest with one hand while holding a crumpled $10 bill in the other. Frank's mother pried it loose from his fingers before the doctor arrived and stashed it down the top of her dress. She'd used it to buy the turkey for his wake. Frank took the last swallow from the Mickey, draining the contents to blur memories and the dirty emotions that feasted on them like parasites. He tossed the empty bottle out the window and started the bus. The kids would be ready for pickup in 15 minutes, and it was going to take him at least 10 to get there. One more late complaint was what that grimy little fucker Strickland wanted so he could fire his arse. Frank put an angry foot on the gas pedal, wondering if the bus would hit a patch of ice, and not caring much if it did. The bus careened down the main road past the farm and his cousin Jimmy's house, where Frank was sleeping off a drunk the day little Ben died. It was stormy then, too, the wind howling like a hungry dog on the prowl. By the time he'd sobered up and gotten to the hospital, his son had slipped away, surrounded by everyone, except his father. When Frank walked into Ben's room, his sister-in-law slapped him across the face before walking out, while Bonnie lay sobbing across their son's tiny body. Instead of facing it all, he ran out of the hospital and never saw Bonnie again until the funeral. He couldn't explain why, but he wasn't able to do it, to help her. He just didn't have it in him. Frank was starting to sweat and shake again by the time he reached his destination. Turning into the school parking lot, he felt relief. The noisy kids were a welcome and needed distraction from himself. Once the youngsters were loaded on, he'd be calm again. The other drivers hated the ruckus the kids made, always bawling at them to shut up. But Frank found the din they created a cure for the poison thoughts that crept in through the holes and cracks in his silent purgatory. The school doors opened, the kids spilling out in small cliques, the boys showing off like peacocks, bellowing and roughhousing in the snow, while the girls whispered in a conspiracy of adolescent shyness. Ben could have been one of those boys by now if he'd lived. Just as this thought threatened to flood Frank's heart with renewed anguish, a group of boisterous 13-year-old boys tramped up the steps, making fun of each other, yanking him back to reality. When the bus was full, Frank pulled onto the main road. The traffic coming out of St. John's was heavier than usual, and navigating around the other vehicles was taking every bit of Frank's concentration. With the rum in his blood and the fists of wind pummeling the side of the bus, it was proving almost impossible to stay in his lane. By the time they reached Ruby Line, only 10 of the 25 kids who were on his route remained. Frank took the corner too tight, nearly colliding with a pickup truck, but he soon righted the bus, congratulating himself on his finessing a close call. The wind continued to rock the bus, but it moved along at a good pace, and Frank was enjoying the banter in the back, glad it was the weekend and nearly the end of his shift. His black cloud mood was lifting, and for a moment he felt like he did before Ben got sick. Somewhere close to Pitt's Memorial Drive, the bus skidded on some black ice, sending it hurtling into the intersection, hitting a woman and her baby going southbound in a blue Mazda. Frank tried to control the skid, but it was too late when he'd hit the car. As the bus spun, Frank was catapulted through the windshield before it rolled over, landing on its side in the middle of the road, broken bits of bloody glass everywhere. The storm still raging around, but no longer within. Frank Sullivan.